You're listening to episode 318 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. On this podcast, we explore the very nature of our minds, how they work, and how they shape our life experience. We believe that life is finite and precious. We know that our minds provide a powerful lens through which we experience the world, and we choose to take responsibility for building psychological strength to craft a life experience that's worth living. I'm Dr. April, a social cognitive psychologist and a life design strategist, and I'm so glad that you are here. Today, during this episode, we will be speaking with Alex Morrell. He is the founder of the Twin Cities Wellness Collective, and he's also the host of a podcast by the exact same name. And he and I have known each other for a little while, and I saw some of his most recent posts on LinkedIn, and they were all about this new paradigm of work that we're all experiencing. You know, many of us who are knowledge workers or people who would typically work in a desk office environment have found ourselves working from home during the pandemic. But as we look ahead, it looks like this could be part of the way that we work, maybe indefinitely. And so he and I had this great conversation about, you know, there are incredible things that working from home and, you know, more flexible work arrangements bring, but there are also some areas that we need to keep in mind to be able to support our mental health and to support our overall well-being. So we have this great conversation. We actually tie in some of the more fundamental, foundational, positive psychology work of Martin Seligman, his famous PERMA model. It's a really great conversation. So if you are someone who is working in this new model that includes remote or flexible work, you're not going to want to miss this interview. Well, hey, everyone. My name is April Seifert, and I am the host of the Building Psych Strength podcast. You can find me on Apple, iTunes, and pretty much everywhere else that you get podcasts. And I'm excited, Alex, for our conversation today because there's so much alignment between the work that you do and the work that I do. And I'll be, just for our audience's sake, I'll be coming at today's topic with a very psychological lens. You can probably tell from my podcast title, but we'll be talking about a really important topic today, and I'll bring as much psych goodness and data and expertise as I can to hopefully help people navigate something that has been challenging and uncertain and definitely a big topic in our professional lives.
Awesome. Well, thank you, April, for that introduction. And I'm Alex Morrell. I am the founder of the Twin Cities Wellness Collective, which is a grassroots community organization working to ignite well-being in the Twin Cities. And I also have a podcast, the Twin Cities Wellness Collective podcast, where we interview experts and people that know a lot about well-being, like April. We are sure to highlight some of the tactics and expertise to help them to help our listeners be more well. And I also am writing a new column, which is Well-Being Weekly, which will explore health, work, personal finance, and the pursuit of a good life. So if you want to check that out, you can as well. But today, April and I are going to talk about how our work life is changing now that we're in a hybrid world and that we're experiencing this migration of people maybe considering leaving their jobs or looking for opportunities elsewhere. So I'm super excited to talk about this with you, April.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome because you can't go very far on, LinkedIn or really any social media without hearing about how this is impacting people's lives as a whole. And two, individually, we've all felt how different things have been in the last year and a half to 2 years. As we've all shifted home because of COVID, so many of us started working from home. And I know, you know, I had been working from home for 6 years, but not to the extent that I did during this period. I still would go to co-working spaces and other things like that. So I wasn't necessarily in my house as much, but I certainly noticed the shift to just how the cadence of my day went, and also the integration between what used to be a very separate life of mine that was outside of the bounds of my family and my personal life, and the melding that happened as I was in my house more and more. And so I can imagine somebody who had been working in an office full time really felt that as they started to work from home.
Yeah, I agree. And I think people really started to experience things differently in their life because of overnight, basically people's work life just smashed into every other part of their life. And for so long, work was just in a vacuum. No one was really, I think even workplaces kind of encouraged us to leave everything. Yes. Outside of work, and you do work, and then you don't really bring that into your home life or the rest of your life either. I think that was just something that, like, the old way of doing things was for so long, and now it's completely different.
Yeah, it really is. And what's been interesting about it is in that integration, you know, when you think about normal life outside of COVID, right? COVID is not the only quote unquote hardship that we've all experienced that has impacted our jobs. Like if you're, and I don't even want to say hardship, I want to say just like major event. So if you are a parent, maybe you have had a child and you've had to take a leave of absence, you know, for a maternity or a paternity leave. Maybe you had to care for a sick family member. Maybe something else was going on and you were away for an extended period of time, or it impacted your work. The difference here is that those other ones were so individual and we went through them alone, right? Like if you have a baby, it's not like everyone else in the world has a baby at the same time. They can kind of remember what it's like, but they're not going through it at the same time. With COVID, we all went through it at the same time, and it almost gave permission for people to collectively go through this reevaluation of what our values are, what is important to us, how we want our day to run, where our boundaries need to be. We all almost got the nod and the yes to do that because literally everyone else in our company was going through the same experience. So it made us feel like it was okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think if there is a positive, if you can even make that, maybe that's not the right way to say it, but I think that a byproduct of going through this with everybody else, and something important that a lot of us learned is, well, we can do work and have a life. Mm-hmm. And we can do work and we can focus on self-care or being there more for our family or taking the time off to care for a loved one, and figuring out how that works inside of our work life, rather than doing work and then figuring out how everything else can fit in outside of work. So I think that is something that I see that I'm really encouraged by, and that hopefully can translate into people pursuing well-being for themselves, but also can translate into workplaces realizing this is something we need to focus on more. And not only can we take care of our shareholders, or but now we need to take care of our stakeholders, one of which is employees. And how can we better engage these individuals and make sure that they're feeling good and that they're not being asked to do things that are sort of insane and give up the rest of their life.
Well, and what you hit on is perfect, right? Because so much of our, and this is just human nature, so much of our individual lives, for sure, the way that we conduct our professional lives and the way that companies run, it's run on a set of assumptions. And lots of times they're unchecked assumptions. We operate as though they're fact, but they're really just untested assumptions. And one of those was, we have to be there. We all have to be on premises. And this proved, no, we absolutely do not have to. And there were companies, a number of them, a former employer of mine, whose headquarters workers, like everyone else, ended up going and working from home, who did exceedingly well during the pandemic. And a lot of that is due to just the degree to which people were able to be more productive when they weren't being interrupted as much. There were just so many things. Now, I don't want to discount the challenges, right? Like, people who were trying to do distance learning while they were working, you are heroes. Yeah. All of those aspects of this, the fear that we all went through, you know, the loneliness, the uncertainty, those all were factors. And we're going to get into that in a bit.
Yeah.
But some of the benefits that we got from it, it provided proof that those assumptions we were operating on were faulty.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that I'm just happy to see people test those assumptions and push back against the norm a little bit. And I think a lot of people have found that, and you can look at different polls and people are like, I want to stay remote, or at least remote in some capacity, or be hybrid. And I think it's because they have more flexibility and time to do things that they care about and actually feed them in a way that work might not completely.
Mm-hmm. And it's tough to give that to people where it's so tangible and you can see it happen in your day-to-day life. You can feel the shift. You can feel the ease that comes from not having to cram a commute in at the beginning and the end of your day, or even just the lift that we all experienced from not having so many social obligations that we had to go to. It was just lovely to have so much space in our calendar that to take that back will be difficult. And I think that's, you know, as you were alluding to, why we're starting to see, I read an article that started, they called it the Great Resignation. Like, the biggest migration of workers between companies as people start to think about, okay, is the culture of my company going forward truly the culture that I want to work in? And if not, do I need to go somewhere else? And it's this big shifting around of people and companies, a magnitude of which we have never seen before. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's really incredible. I think I read, I'm not going to say a number because I can't remember, but it's a number of people that are thinking about leaving, like you talked about. And it's it's pretty amazing to see that so many people are thinking about different forms of employment and also just questioning how their company is going to handle this going forward. And are they going to support me and support things that are now I'm realizing are my priorities? And I think that's really a good thing for people because they're thinking about themselves for once and they're thinking about their well-being and their quality of life, which are things that I'm a champion of, of course. So I think that it's good to see people reevaluating this and starting to resign if they need to, which used to be something that people were really afraid of and was this big leap. But now it's good to see that people are starting to take this leap and really for themselves, which is just not something we've seen in the past. It used to be we prioritize work even if we don't like it, or we just grind it out. And finally, maybe that's not the case, which is, I think, a powerful thing.
Yeah. And I don't know that we'll be able to really, you know, go back or do things differently. It's interesting there. There are a couple of organizations that do research, and I'm going to get this like 80% right, because this is coming off again with me too. This is coming off the top of my head from something that I read quite a while ago. But there are organizations that study generations. So, you know, Gen X, the boomer generation, millennials, Gen Z, et cetera. And they talk about how there are sometimes these formative experiences that generations have. And formative, they mean like as they enter a new domain of life, a big experience happens that just changes the way that they engage from that point forward. So for the millennial generation, as they entered the workforce, this was just at the time when our assumption that, or the old rule that we used to rely on, that go get a good stable job and work there most of your company, when that broke. That was right at the time that it became more customary for companies to lay people off every 18 months to 3 years. Mm-hmm. And if that's your first experience in a quote stable job, would you really believe in the stability of a job if that's like your formative experience? Not really. And so you hear a lot of like stereotypes of the millennial generation, like they're not loyal. They don't stay somewhere a long time. They quit over nothing. But if you think about it in the context of that formative experience, it actually makes sense. Like, well, of course they wouldn't, because they got to a job they were promised that would be stable, and then they got laid off every 18 months. Like, why would you be loyal and stay? So I'm thinking about this experience, this hybrid model, working from home, super changing, uncertain landscape, as what type of formative experience is this going to be for Gen X and some of the, you know, younger Gen Y generation as they're coming into work, and this is the experience that they're having.
Right. And I think that that is, it's just going to be an expectation going forward that this, that remote work is an option. And that even for generations that are experiencing it later on, it's, I think it's still an expectation, because people have had such a good, I think many people have had a really good experience with it. I shouldn't say, they've had mostly a positive experience, I should say. There are some negatives to it, which I think we'll talk about, like being alone a lot, or trying to balance other sorts of things from home, like learning from home and all that sort of stuff has been difficult. But I think people are just going to expect that they have remote work offered to them, or at least in some sort of hybrid approach. And they're also going to expect that their employers provide some sort of, I think going forward, some sort of well-being program, or are at least considering their employees' well-being, because I think the pandemic has really revealed that these things matter, like how we're doing in not just our work life, but our, how we're doing physically and emotionally and mentally, all play into how we show up as employees and as workers and in our job. And that's going to be an expectation going forward as well. And it needs to be tied into remote work in some way or another. So employers are going to have to start to pay attention to what their employees need, and provide them with that, or they're going to find somewhere else to work.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It reminds me of, we've talked about it a lot on my podcast, some of Martin Seligman's work in positive psychology. It's some of the most formative foundational work of positive psychology. And it's the PERMA model. So if you want to Google this, people listening, it's P-E-R-M-A. It's an acronym. And these are basically the five biggest factors that his research showed lead to what he would call a good life. So this is a balanced life, not one that's void of any challenge. That's impossible. But one where you're bobbing and weaving with the challenge of life and you're largely coming out feeling resilient and above mm-hmm. water and able to enjoy the good things that life has to offer. And so this acronym, the P in it stands for positive emotion. So obviously, are we feeling good from time to time? Do we have some positive emotion and does that outweigh the negative? The E stands for engagement. So are we doing activities? Sometimes this gets linked with a flow state. So are we doing activities that we get immersed in and that we feel like are really engaging? The R stands for relationships. These are positive, close, supportive relationships. The M stands for meaning. Is there something bigger than me that I am working toward? And then the A stands for achievement. Have I accomplished or achieved something officially, like something that feels like a big check the box or a finish line? And if you think about those, right, positive emotion, engagement, relationships, meaning, achievement, every single one of them is interwoven, and it can either be interwoven in a good way or in a not good way with the way that we set up hybrid and flexible work. And I wanted to bring that rubric up, I mean, as a follow-up to what you were just talking about, Alex, because if you're in a leadership role or you're even just thinking about how you support yourself as an individual mm-hmm. employee in this crazy time, or even going into the future when it's just normal, yeah. having a rubric like that to think about, like, are you filling each one of those cups up? And if you're not, and you're not feeling great, it gives you a clue as to where you might intervene or try to do something differently to give yourself a better experience.
Yeah, I really like that you're bringing this up, April, because like you said, it's a great rubric. And I think this moment has given a lot of people the opportunity to actually hear themselves and listen to themselves. And for so long, people maybe didn't do that as much or didn't give themselves that permission. Mm. But now people are doing that, which I think is a really powerful thing. And we're starting to tap into some self-awareness a little bit, and using the PERMA model can start to at least jumpstart our thought process a little bit on, how am I feeling? And at me, if I'm thinking about myself, like I often don't, I will just put my head down and not think about these questions unless I force myself to, and actually ask myself, like, and take some time to do some reflection and, or something like COVID causes us to think about it. Or it's some sort of life transition, some sort of big life transition mm-hmm. that we all have that can bring up these sorts of thoughts. But I'm excited to see people think this way more and be more self-aware. And I think that once we are more self-aware, we can start to determine what we want our future to look like. And start to do some sort of maybe some life design.
Yeah.
Talk about April.
Yeah, for sure. What I think is awesome about what you were saying is the notion of self-awareness, the sneaky thing psychologically with stuff like this mm-hmm. is that we're not talking about, even in the situation of COVID, maybe you can point out a few factors. Like in the beginning, remember when we didn't know anything and we were all really scared because we didn't know how severe it was. We had no really good tests. Like there was literally nothing. And so we were all really scared. Mm-hmm. put that aside. Like, so where we've been maybe in the last 10 months or so, the real implications of this. So any one of these, the positive emotion, engagement, relationships, meaning, achievement, a deficit in any one of those is not something that you're going to notice in a day. So Monday hits, you don't have any real like positive relationship types of engagements. You might not notice, but what we don't realize psychologically is that these are the straws that break the camel's back. This is cumulative. And once we've reached that point where the camel, this is a terrible analogy, the camel's starting to sag. It's got too many straws. I don't know. Whatever. You get what I'm saying. Like, you're starting to realize that something's not right.
Yeah.
Because it's been a cumulative addition of all of these small individual elements. It's hard unless you're really thoughtful, unless you're almost formulaic about it, to figure out, you know what? I'm lonely. You may just be like, oh, I'm so crabby today, or boom, I'm just like depressed. This sucks. What you might not, and you might use really like general language. I feel bad. When in reality, what it is I feel lonely, or I don't think I've gotten something done the last 3 weeks. Achievement. It's hard to think through what might be causing my quote bad amorphous mood, unless you have a rubric where you can literally look at it and say, how many times in the last 3 weeks have I laughed, like truly laughed? How many times? Let's be honest. How many times in the last 3 weeks have I been so immersed in something that time stood still and I felt like I could do it forever? How many times in the last 3 weeks have I had a meaningful conversation, a deep one with somebody I love and trust? On and on and on. Like, you can ask yourself those things and realize, oh, it's not that I feel bad. It's that I haven't done anything. There's no levity in my life right now. There's nothing enjoyable. Yeah. I need to go do something fun. Like, I'm going to go watch a stupid 90s comedy movie or something like that to perk me back up. But you can't figure that out if it's just cumulative and you don't do that sort of diagnostic exercise, because it all can get kind of misconstrued with each other.
Right. And I like the sort of practical questions that you're asking. Like, how many times have I laughed, or some of those types of questions, because I think that gives us an idea of how we can actually live this out or gauge how we're doing. So we don't end up just putting our head down and then getting to one day where we hit breaking point and that's not a positive experience and for most people. And then we can make tweaks before things get out of control. And are there ways that that we can gauge our feelings, April, or ways that we can sort of bring a perma to life more in the way that we're thinking about it or thinking about it in practice?
Yeah. So on the emotion side specifically, because it gets murky here. This is why, if you're an audience member of mine and you're listening to this on Building Psych Strength, you know I talk about this a lot. The reason why I talk about emotional intelligence a lot is that emotions get muddy fast. They're rarely clean and straightforward. So, for example, I always use an example of like being a parent. You rarely have any clean emotions anymore because my daughter in the last few weeks went to kindergarten for the first time. I was so proud and devastated at the same time. Like, how are you on two ends of the emotional continuum at the same time? And it feels very murky. The other example that I give to people is let's say you had a big bucket and you took a bunch of blue paint. And that blue paint represents happiness, and you dumped it into the bucket. And then you took some red paint, and that red paint represents anger, and you dumped it into the bucket. And then you took green paint, and that represents jealousy, and you dumped it into the bucket, right? And on, all these different emotions, which are different colors of paint. And you stirred it up, and you look at the bucket, and you're like, what color is that? It's brown sludge.
Brown.
Yeah. It's sludge. Like, you can't look at that and say, oh, that's blue and red and green and yellow and purple. You can't do that because it's hard to sift those emotions back apart. So the concrete thing that I tell people to do, go to Google, Google the term wheel of emotions. You're going to get a big wheel that in the middle, some of them say good, bad, or positive, negative. And as the wheel goes out, you'll have rings that get more and more specific with emotions. So bad might be lonely, anger, boredom, whatever. And then out from that, lonely might be like detached versus abandoned versus whatever. Like, you get much more specific.
Right.
Pick at least the second ring out. If you want to go for extra credit, if you're an overachiever, great. Go for the outermost ring on that wheel. Yeah. Think about the situation you're in and just ask yourself some questions like, okay, so I'm not saying I am, but if I were angry, what about this situation would make me angry? If I were excited, what about this situation would make me excited? If I were sad, what would make me sad? If I were happy, what would make me happy? If I were jealous, what would make me jealous? Because you're not admitting to it. Psychologically, we don't like to admit that we're jealous. We don't like to say that we're sad. We don't like to, you know, we don't love to admit to especially a lot of those more difficult emotions. But if you just like pose a question, like, let's say someone was, what about this would make them feel that way? And kind of try that on for size. I think what you'll realize is that the quote unquote feeling that you're having actually incorporates a lot of aspects of those things. You'll realize like, no, actually I am super jealous, or even maybe a little bit jealous of my friend who had this resource in her house that I didn't have during COVID. And my life was a little bit harder than hers. And yeah, there is a little bit of jealousy there. Doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you a person with emotions. But like, it helps you tease them apart and understand how you're feeling. And that's a huge aspect of self-awareness and emotional intelligence. So wheel of emotions, just go try a bunch of them on for size and then see how complex that bucket of paint ends up being. Cause I bet it's a lot more than you expect.
Right. I think that's really helpful to think about because it is so complicated to figure out what you're actually feeling. And that's a really practical way. So yeah, I'm glad that you shared that. I think that can even help me because I do have days like this, and my wife is like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I have no idea. Like,
I don't know.
yeah, I think that's really, really practical way to think about that. And gives me something that I can grab onto a little bit and feels concrete. So
yeah. I like that. Well, and if you think about like leaders too, like maybe this is a point to make before we wrap up this episode. Like if you're a leader of a team, or you are an HR professional who's thinking about like, God, how do I support my company through this? There's a notion of, I mean, let's just be real, right? We have all been trained not to bring our whole self to work. We just have. We don't bring our emotions. We don't bring our vulnerabilities as often. We like to come onto Zoom these days and make it look like we have our lives together and that, you know, we're doing great. We're fine. So if we just acknowledge that, and acknowledge the fact that there's not a ton of companies out there who have the level of psychological safety that you would need in order for an employee to come in and fully disclose any of the exercises I just talked about, with their coworkers. What you might do is send them out and say, there's no expectation here of you giving any feedback back to the company. You don't owe me a response to this. You don't owe the company, your coworkers. This is not a group exercise where we're going to do this together. And I only mention that if you have a company where this is your culture, by all means do it. So you have to kind of gauge your culture. Right. But if you're in a culture where you legit want to support people, but let's just be realistic, no one's going to share, send this out to people and let them do that on their own with some resources where they may be able to go connect with, you know, your EAP or a coaching resource that you provide or whatever it happens to be in your company, but at least give people the practical rubric that they can go through in order to help themselves sift through some of this uncertainty. Even if you don't hear anything back, the gift of giving them the ability to sift through it and make some certainty out of it, I think can be very, very powerful for your team.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it's so important for people to at least know how to experience some of their emotions, or like you said, be able to go through this rubric and at least know where they're at. And that can help at least give them an idea of what they need to shift so they can show up better at work. Or at least diagnose what they need to get help with. And like you said, they can find resources through whoever sent them the exercise or the rubric that you talked about. And I think another part of this is just, how can we show up and connect with people as people? And like, how can we, even if we're a leader, how can we be vulnerable and talk about how this, whatever we're all experiencing in this instance, it's work from home and going through the pandemic and figuring out all the stuff that goes with that. Well, maybe we need to take the first step as the leader and share a little bit about what's going on in our life and how it's been hard for us. And that will then set the stage for others to be vulnerable and share their experience. And then we can support one another. And it sort of opens up this place where people can start to be supportive and show up as people rather than just worker bees.
Yeah. I mean, that was the big lesson, right, from COVID, is that it's this crazy thing that, you know, companies are made up of people. Oops. Right. You know, we're not. Yeah. And Ashley Smith is one of my co-founders of Peak Mind, who sponsors the podcast. And she has this awesome saying that, you know, unfortunately, you are a human being who is constrained by your biology and psychology. This means as much as we wish we could just have a limitless tank, a limitless amount of energy, a limitless amount of patience, be able to just like go nonstop, that's not us. We have biological limitations. You need to sleep, eat, drink water, rest. You need psychologically to connect to other people, feel enjoyment, feel engagement, feel supported, be able to freak out at times and feel like that's okay and not judged. Mm-hmm. We have all of those needs, and it doesn't make you a weak person. You're not doing it wrong. You're not somehow not resilient because you have basic psychological and biological needs. That's just what you are. Unfortunately, you're a human being and those are your needs, and you need to take care of them. Mm-hmm. And the more we do, the better we all show up, and the better we all show up, the better our company does.
Right. Yeah.
I love it. This has been so awesome. This has been so good. One, to catch up with you, because it's been a long time since you and I have connected. And two, to be able to do this joint episode and allow each of our respective audiences to see the type of work that we do. So this has just been awesome. And I'm so glad we got this set up.
Yeah, it's been great, April. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and learn from you. It's been really fun.
You know, as I spoke with Alex, it made me think about a couple of other resources that I wanted to let you know about. So in this interview, we talked a lot about Martin Seligman's PERMA model. And if you're interested in learning more about it, it's actually really comprehensive and a really great model to know a lot about if you want to start applying this stuff to your life. You might want to check out Seligman's book, Flourish. It's all about how to apply the principles of positive psychology to your own life so that you can improve your life experience. And that is what we are all about on this podcast. You might also want to check out episode 251 of the podcast. It's called Preparing for the Post-COVID Life Change. In that episode, we talk about ways to sort of anticipate and support yourself through the life changes that we're all going through, basically as COVID continues to shift and change. So that episode, if you're finding yourself in need of ways to support yourself in sort of the volatility that we've all been going through, that episode is another great resource for you. Those two resources and a link to Alex's podcast are listed in this episode description, so you can just swipe up on whatever mobile device you're on and click around, or you can go to the show notes page of this episode as well. All of those links are available for you there. Today we heard from Alex Morrell of the Twin Cities Wellness Collective, and we had a great conversation about thriving while working remotely. Thank you so much, Alex, for such an incredible conversation. And if you want to learn more about Alex's work, please visit tcwellnesscollective.com. You can also subscribe to his podcast from that same link. And I want to thank each and every one of you who's left us a rating or a review on iTunes. And if you haven't yet, I would really appreciate it. And finally, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet, and I'm so grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I'll see you next week.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.